This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this morning's precept ceremony. Jikai means to receive the precepts, and welcome particularly to family and friends and all those who have come to support the students who are receiving the Bodhisattva precepts and to witness this. So the Buddha's taught throughout his life that this path is based in a deep morality. He said that, in fact, we are fundamentally moral beings because we experience things in terms of positive and negative, in terms of pain and pleasure. We see things that are helpful to life and to all that life is, and we see things that are destructive of life, and we see ourselves in the center of all of that in terms of what we do with our actions, our words, and our thoughts, the karma we create. And so he realized a kind of revolutionized, in a sense, what it means to be a human being, that all of us have influence. All of us are moral beings within a moral universe. And we see within ourselves and around ourselves many different ways of living that out. Within our own training, students are introduced to these teachings and are taught, given instruction how to begin to examine and incorporate these teachings of wisdom and compassion, loving kindness, patience, tolerance, forbearance within ourselves. And there are many practices and teachings, sutras, throughout the history of Buddhism, beginning with the Buddha, that are very much about cultivating, developing this within ourselves, which means both to recognize and calm and let go of and ultimately realize as empty all of the what we think of as negative traits and currents and streams and energies and behavior within us. And that is essential and not enough, that is also important to bring forth, to generate, cultivate mind and karma and thoughts, words, and actions that bring forth all that is good. In fact, the Buddha said that this path is about ceasing from all that is harm, bringing forth all that is good, and training and realizing the mind. Because he realized that that is at the heart of everything. We can't just decide we are going to be wise and compassionate beings. We can decide to, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. That our will is not enough. Our ideas and concepts are not enough. That we actually have to practice and deeply, not so much transform, but realize our fundamental nature. And so when students come into training in this Sangha, we begin, all of us as students, begin on that path, and we begin practicing it in a sense as we can at that time in our practice. And then as we develop, one of the paths that is open to students, and it is a path that is open but is not required because this has to, students have to bring themselves to this freely, is to discern and make the decision to want to take these precepts as their own vows. And so even though we encounter them in the very beginning of training and we in chanting the four Bodhisattva vows every day, we are encountering and studying and examining those, but we're not taking them yet. And so today these students are receiving, taking these vows, which is a whole nother thing. Because within the taking of vows, something happens internally that's very deep. Deeper than we actually know, usually, at the time that we're taking the vows. That in a sense, as we live those vows, we begin to discover, if we continue, if we're sincere, what it was we actually did in the taking of those vows. All of the implications, the ramifications, and the very nature of vows itself, and the importance of them, not just in Buddhist practice, not just in religious practice, but in life. In a sense, from a certain sense, there is no real ability to have life without vow. And so this is a very important day in the life of a Sangha and these students because this is what's taking place. So it's both very joyous because it's a wonderful thing that when people step forward and say, I would like to dedicate my life to doing all that is good and being in the world in a very conscious and intentional way to bring the alleviation of suffering and bringing benefit to others. And it's also, in a sense, a solemn event because it's no small thing. It's a serious matter. And that's why students train for at least a couple of years before they take these vows so that we can really develop a clearer sense of what we're actually doing and not do it casually. Really understand not only the responsibility we're taking on, but the internal shift that's taking place. Because when we have not taken a vow and we act not well, that has certain consequences. But when we have taken vows and we turn against those, that we create a different kind of karma there, which is more significant. And so that's why it's important that we be ready when we do this. And these precepts are based in selflessness, wisdom that all things are empty. And that emptiness takes 10,000 shapes and forms and sounds. These vows themselves are empty. The precepts are empty. The raksus that they have spent all week sowing are empty. That may break your heart a little bit. But in fact, it's because they're empty that the raksu can have power. That the raksu can be what it is intended to be, which is an embodiment of the robe of liberation and not something that you attach to, that you become righteous about. And so being empty, how do we live that forward? How do we alleviate suffering? And so as we begin, the students will first come and face the altar and do three bows to the Buddha. And so these series of bows are recognizing our various lines of ancestry, you could say. Because we only are here today because of our ancestors, because of our lineages, which is just a way of saying people and all kinds of beings who have made it possible, been instrumental in helping us to arrive at this moment today. So these first sets of vows are to the Buddha, our original teacher. The second series of vows are to their parents, if their parents are here. If they're not, then they will go into the Buddha hall and bow in the direction of their parents, whether they're alive or deceased. And this is to acknowledge and appreciate, express gratitude to our family lineage, which gave us life, brought us into this world, and nurtured us well enough that we could be here today, because none of us can find our way into the Dharma, no matter how we might view our lives and our circumstances, without having done enough good, created enough goodness in the world and within ourselves to have had the thought of seeking the Dharma, to have been able to bring forth bodhicitta, the way-seeking mind, and to have actually sought and found the Dharma. That can only happen, you know, we tend to so focus on the negative aspects of things, but that can only happen because we have done enough good, brought enough good into our lives and this world to be able to be here. And the last set of vows is to the Kaishi or precepts teacher. Today, that is myself. And this is an acknowledgement that is as important as the Buddha and all of the ancestors before us are, that it is our living teachers who allow us to encounter directly the Dharma. And so to them we have a special debt. And again, whether those teachers are still alive or not. And so these sets of vows recognizes that. As part of the teacher's vow is to give what they have received, to pass on what has been passed to them. And so now we will, and so the main altar has been closed, and so the altar now is established here with the preceptor sitting in the place of the Buddha. So now we'll invoke the three treasures. And so this is bringing forth into this space all of those ancestors, the Buddhas and all enlightened beings and all those endowed with Buddha nature, the Dharma, all things that are true, which is all phenomenal things, everything in this great universe, and the Sangha, this Sangha, the larger Sangha, the Sangha around the world, and all humans who have human consciousness and have the ability to bring forth bodhicitta. And so I'll do this twice, three times rather, twice in Japanese and once in English. Everyone please gassho. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo ho namo jipo so namo hanshi shakyamuni butsu namo daisy dai hi kyu ku kanze om bo sa namo dajin fugen bo sa namo dajin manju shri bo sa namo koso joya dai shi namo taiso josa dai shi namo riki dai so shi bo satsu. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with our great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daishi. Be one with Taiso Josai Daishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Namu Jipo Butsu Namu Jipo Ho Namu Jipo So Namu Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu Namu Daisi Dai Hi Kyu Ku Kanze On Bo Sa Namu Dajin Fugen Bo Sa Namu Dajin Manjushri Bo Sa Namu Koso Joyo Daishi, Namu Taiso Joyo Daishi, Namu Riki Daiso Shibo Satsu. And now we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. We talked a bit about this earlier in the week. In turning towards suffering, which is the only way we can alleviate it, in whatever direction, in every direction we turn, we will meet pain. Pain within ourselves and pain within others. We will meet grief and remorse, regret. We'll meet, in a sense, all of the expressions of being a moral being. How do we do that? How do we become more and more unguarded, more intimate, which means more able to experience that suffering directly without the armor? And not be crushed. And so the Gatha of Atonement is an essential teaching and practice that is directed towards our own actions, which we have regret over, that we wish we hadn't done, but we can't take back. Actions that have hurt others, that have hurt ourselves. And so in the Gatha of Atonement, we recognize that we create binding actions that have negative effects on ourselves and others, and that continue. That's the thing about an action, is it's like giving a gift to the world, that once we give it, we don't know where it's going to go. We may think we do, but we don't. And so the Buddha said we should be very awake to what we set into motion. Having set into motion, we've done that, that we study the inner machinations of that, that it arises from a view, an understanding of ourselves and the world, which finds its way into our desires, what we want, which finds its voice through our thoughts and words and actions. And those desires can be based in greed, anger, and delusion, or they can be based in generosity, compassion, and wisdom. And so when we atone, we're acknowledging all that. And when we chant all evil karma, evil is a very powerful word, and it's to get our attention, right? That we have that capacity. Most of us may not think that we operate in the realm of evil, and hopefully we don't. But that our actions, we have the capacity to act within the whole spectrum of human activity. And so evil here stands for everything and anything that we have ever committed, whether we're aware of it or not, that has caused harm. And so we embrace all of that. And in atoning, we take complete responsibility. So part of what happens today is that all the times that we would turn towards making excuses and blaming, basically trying to let ourselves off the hook, that we put that away, right? Those moments of disempowerment, really. And we empower ourselves by taking responsibility, because now we can do something. And part of what we need to do is deal with our own karma so that we can move forward more wise, more compassionate, and unencumbered. Right? Because when we encumber ourselves with our regret and our grief and our remorse, our self-criticism, we're less and less good to anybody. Right? Because we're so weighed down. And so we'll do this all together. So everyone's invited to take the Gatha of Atonement. And I should mention that, you know, these Buddhist precepts, really all of Buddhism, is ultimately not about Buddhism. Buddhism is a name we give to something, this tremendous vehicle, this tradition that has come down to us. But it itself is about realizing that no Buddha, no, all dharmas are forms of emptiness. The Buddha has no fixed form. And so we use what is skillful, and we let drop away what is not skillful. And so the Gatha of Atonement in that way speaks to everybody, right? All these precepts speak to everybody. We can speak about them through this tradition as Buddhists, and we are, but we also need to understand they're really universal. And so we'll do this in call and answer. Everyone please gassho. Shoki. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. In Buddhism, there's a lot of teachings and practices, well, all of it pretty much, within the four elements. which is what we are, it's what everything is. And so there are different ways in which we bring those elements forward. They're always active on the altar, here. And so water ritual is very ancient, it's part of many, many traditions. And here it's not so much a cleansing or a purification, because the Buddha realized that we are all fundamentally perfect. The very notion of impure is based in duality. But rather it's a recognition that there is one mind. We speak of one Dharma, because there is just one Dharma, and that's just another way of saying there is just one mind. The mind of the student and teacher, the mind of an ordinary being and a Buddha, the mind of a Buddhist and non-Buddhist, the mind of defilement and enlightenment. There's one mind. And now we'll begin with receiving the precepts themselves. So we begin with the three treasures, because this is the totality. This is what makes this, in a sense, within the house of the Buddha, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Morality exists in all traditions and is understood within its own way within all traditions. And there's a lot of commonness there, because we are not so different. But there are also distinctions. And these precepts are based in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. They can only take place because we take refuge. And so taking refuge is here done formally. You take refuge. But taking refuge is really something we should be doing all the time, every day, as practitioners. And to take refuge, as Master Dogen said, is to unreservedly rely upon Buddha, the Buddha Shakyamuni, this person who, because he was a human being, we can do this. His enlightenment, even more important than the person, in a sense, because he is past, but his enlightenment can never pass because it is unborn. To take refuge in the Dharma, the teachings, that which is true, that which is uncorruptible, because it doesn't abide anywhere. And all things. What is it to take refuge in all things? How much do we need that today? And the Sangha, to take refuge in Sangha, this Sangha, our Sangha, the Sangha at large, all beings who possess Buddha nature, how much do we need that today? And so, again, I'll do this twice in Japanese and once in English, and we do it in English, it will be call and response so that everyone can take refuge. And remember, students, to have your eyes up. Please, Gassho.
Namo kiye butsu namo kiye ho namo kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukyo kiye hokyo kiye so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the
Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
Namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san. Kiye ho riji san, kiye so wago san, kiye bukyo, kiye hokyo, kiye so kyo.
Will you maintain this?
I vow to take refuge in the three treasures.
Just one bow. And now the pure precepts. So the three pure precepts echo what the Buddha spoke of in terms of how to sort of understand the totality of this path, ceasing from harm, doing all that is good, and training and studying the mind. Here we also bring in actualizing good for others, because this is the Bodhisattva path. And these precepts, as we spoke about during the week, are enormously important. They're so simple, and they're so broad, and they don't position, they don't direct, they don't answer the question, what do I do? How do I respond in this moment? That's your practice. That's each of us to discern and to sort out in those moments and to practice. What they do is they define, basically describe, the nature of the universe. From an enlightened view, there is no evil. From an enlightened view, there is no good. And from an enlightened view, there are no others. And within that enlightened view, good and evil exist within the human community. And then we bring that onto all other beings. So how do we realize that non-duality? And how do we actually practice in moments that can be very complex? All right. What do you do when any step forward is going to create some harm? Not stepping forward is an action. So the pure precepts are really enormously important for this. The first pure precept is to not create evil. Evil only exists in the mind. It doesn't exist in the world. It has no abiding place. It's not a thing. And yet, being empty, it has the power to bring about great effect. And so to not create evil, to not create what is harmful. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Do not create evil. Will you maintain this?
Not create evil.
The second pure precept is to practice good. Good, too, does not exist in the world. We are not inherently of any characteristic or in any quality in the sense that that quality exists autonomously, independently. And yet we bring forth good, which is the Bodhisattva path. And so to practice good is to recognize that and to be of the nature to practice good, whether there's anyone present or not, whether there's any direct receiver of that good or not. It's just a way of being in the world. This is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi. This is the way of all beings. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
The third pure precept is actualize good for others. And so the beauty of practicing good is that it just is everywhere, whether there's something in front of you or not. Actualize good for others is to be very clear that this path is to in our influence of others, because not having an influence is not an option, in our influence of others, to actualize that influence as good, that it is beneficial, that it is affirming, that it is liberating. This is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
Because the pure precepts are so inclusive of everything, which is their power, we could also get lost in them. Right? They could seem vague because they are so large. And so the grave precepts are to ensure that we find our way within the pure precepts through the specific things that we as human beings do and have done and will probably continue to do as long as we're human beings, they create harm. And how to liberate those actions and that mind and those words and thoughts so that they are magnanimous, so that they're giving life rather than taking it away, they're serving rather than destroying. And so the grave precepts bring our attention to those universal actions that create the most binding karma, sometimes because of their magnitude in a single action, sometimes because the repetitiveness of a small action over and over and over again that accumulates a certain kind of karma. The first of the grave precepts is to affirm life, to not kill, based in the principle of ahimsa, of non-harming. Every creature completes itself by its very nature. Wherever it stands, it covers its own ground. When we take the life away from something, we steal its ability to fulfill its role in this universe, its own self-nature. We steal its opportunity to be a benefit to others. To not kill, it means to not harbor a mind of not killing, to not give rise to the desire to take life, but rather to live in the affirmation. And so each of these has a ceasing function, to not kill, and a giving function, to affirm life. Dogen said, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Affirm life, do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
Of course, that's also a very complex vow because we have to take life to live. And so within this precept is the koan of how do we take life? How do we do that as responsibly as possible? And then what do we give? The second precept, great precept, is about giving, to be giving and not steal. So this is to develop a mind that is non-grasping, being on a path of non-attachment, which is really a path of joy, of traveling lightly, and being contented, to have a non-grasping mind, of not seeking contentment in other things or power or titles or positions. It's really a basic attitude of generosity. And to release ourselves from that fearful and anxious an insecure mind of attachment, because why else would we? To not believe in that sense of insufficiency that we have in certain moments that leads us to seeking of something outside of ourselves. Dogen said, the mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. To be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving. I will not steal.
These precepts are concerned not just with the action, because the moment of the action comes and goes, but they bring our attention to all that leads up to that action, because everything is dependent. One moment of taking is just a moment based on karma and conditions. And so it's really examining that mind, and also the mind following the action, the karma, because that's what really helps us to free ourselves from the grasp of these impulses, is when we see the whole trajectory. The third great precept is to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality. So recognizing that sexuality is such a powerful force, not just within human beings, but within all of life. And it has the power within us as human beings to destroy love, to destroy trust, to destroy intimacy, to create tremendous injury. But it also has the power to create tremendous good, to create intimacy, to bring us closer, to establish and deepen faith and trust. It can create deep wounds. It can also heal deep wounds. And so to understand that the mind and body are one, to understand that we and others are of one nature, so that when we reduce ourselves or another to an object, to something to be used, everyone is injured. Not equally, but everyone is injured. So to honor the body, which means the whole person, the whole being. You know, our culture, in a sense, makes sexuality way too important, and at the same time doesn't take it nearly seriously enough. Honor the body. Dogen said the three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and ignorance are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I vow to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
The fourth great precept is to manifest truth, to not lie. And as I spoke about during the week, this is one of the most important precepts because it's really the whole of the Buddha Dharma path is about truth. What is true? And so this precept recognizes our capacity, in fact, our inclination towards all manner of deception toward self and other. And it really challenges us to have courage, the courage to be truthful. The courage to be truthful in ways that are skillful. So these precepts are also based in wisdom and compassion. So sometimes to just follow the letter or follow the literal understanding and to try and be truthful in all times and all situations creates harm and doesn't create anything beneficial. And so we have to be awake within these precepts. They are not rules. They're not bound. They're alive. To not turn away from what is real, but rather seek all that is true. And to try and really dedicate ourselves to living a life without deception, which is not a small thing. But within a life without deception is a life without regret. And that's a wonderful thing. Truth itself cannot be manipulated. That's what makes it true. Only self-serving desires. Manipulation only happens in our mind. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there's neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Maintain manifest truth, do not lie. We maintain this.
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
The next precept is to proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. So this pertains traditionally and directly to any kind of intoxicant that would cloud the natural clarity of the mind. But particularly today, we need to really understand that there are many ways of clouding the mind, with busyness, with agitation, with work, with sex, with anything that basically veils the natural clarity, brightness of the mind. But we understand, when we understand and encounter that bright, clear, radiant mind, there's less and less desire to cloud it. When we encounter that mind, we no longer seek fogginess, dullness, distance. And what we are seeing at every step along the way is that the very idea of escaping, right, through intoxication, escaping pain, escaping difficulty, is itself an illusion. There is no escape. What we're trying to escape from is ourself, and everywhere we go, there we are. When we try and escape to avoid the pain, we only increase the pain. The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I am bound to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
Now, there are several of these precepts that relate directly to speech, because the Buddha realized how powerful our speech is in terms of creating karma, binding, and liberating. See the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. So the sense of otherness, creating the stranger, is present in every form of anger, of hatred, of violence, of aggression. It's the basis of all oppression, of all bias, and it's an illusion. And it's always based in something that is self-serving and fundamentally unsustainable. It creates a sense of difference between ourselves and others. There are short Buddhas and tall Buddhas, young and old Buddhas. There are Buddhas that fall down. There are Buddhas that stand up. Where's the distinction? This is the study. To be free of right and wrong within our world of right and wrong is liberation. In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, and the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
And from the perspective in which we teach and practice these precepts, when it's necessary to speak of others' errors and faults, we should only do so to serve, to help, to be a benefit, there should be no enjoyment in that. Because oftentimes that's what's functioning, is we're enjoying speaking of others' errors. It makes us feel better about ourselves. And that takes us to the next precept, to realize self and other as one, to not elevate the self and blame others. When there is no self-clinging, then we're no longer lifted up by praise or dashed on the rocks with blame. We hear, we can receive, we can reflect, It's not about ignoring, it's about realizing that there is nowhere for that to land. There is no abiding self. And so in the same sense, there's no desire to elevate others or put others down. There is no more gain from that. Each person is complete, fulfilling their own virtue. Nothing exists within ourself that does not exist within others, and vice versa. If we think otherwise, we should just look a little closer. This is really about maintaining your own seat. In a sense, minding your own business as you practice alleviating self, this alleviation of suffering for others. Dogen said, Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's neither outside nor inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not even a square inch of earth upon which to stand. Realize self and others as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and others as one. I will not elevate the self and blame others.
Now, the Buddha spoke of the kleshas, the afflictions. We speak of the three poisons, greed, anger, delusion. These last three precepts relate directly to that. So the next is to give generously, to not be withholding. Stealing is to take something that doesn't belong to us, so it recognizes that within our world we have conventions of possession and to respect that. Withholding is to recognize that we are in the possession of something that we could give and we don't. And this pertains specifically to the Dharma, to be withholding. So a tight-fisted teacher is a teacher who does not open their hand and give forth the Dharma. But all of us have something to offer. In every moment, in every encounter, there's always something that we have to offer, whether it's material or non-material. And when we hold on because we don't want to give that up, we've already lost it. When we let go, everything becomes abundant. And in that way, a blade of grass, a word, a glance, a gesture can be an expression of giving. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Give generously, do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
The next is to actualize harmony, do not be angry. So angry is another very powerful force within us. Right? It can burn down houses and villages. It can destroy mountains. In fact, when we look around at our earth, at so much of the destruction, do we not see the anger and the aggression in that destruction, in that desecration? And what practice helps us see is that the conflict, because anger is just an expression of conflict, is in the mind. To not be afraid, the Bodhisattva path is to not be afraid to make the first move, to move forward into the anger. So practicing not being angry means when you are angry, to bring forth awareness, to bring forth taking responsibility, to in that moment manifest compassion, which may not look like compassion or feel like it, but to take responsibility for that action, that anger is compassion. And to realize that acceptance of anger, of the 10,000 things, is not inaction, it's not passive, it's anything but. It frees us to be active. And so in anger, we have to be careful to not deny and to not indulge, to really practice the middle way and get to the heart of anger, the thought before the anger arises, the desire before the thought arises, the view before the desire arises. It is not regressing, it is not advancing. It's not real, it's not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There is an ornamented cloud ocean. Actualize harmony, do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
And I think it's for that reason that Dogen, in his comments here, these are drawn from the Zui Monkey, he's really making clear the conventional and the ultimate perspective that is so important in encountering anger. It is real, and it is not real. The last of the great precepts is to experience the intimacy of things, to not defile the three treasures. And so we started by taking refuge, which is to bring in the whole universe and to rely upon it. And here, to experience the intimacy of things, to not defile. To defile is to want to hurt, to injure, to destroy, and it always happens from the outside. So when we place ourselves outside of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we're standing on a precipice. As Rumi said, wake up, you're standing on the edge of the roof and you're drunk. Right? So we're in a precipitous moment when we put ourselves outside the three treasures. And if we look, we will notice that. And so to take refuge, to return, is to not turn against our own home or your natural mind. It's to realize the three treasures as your own body and mind, and to realize that when our practice is wavering, we will find our stability and we will find the path open up again within the three treasures. Dogen says, living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to the ocean of reality. You should not comment on them, just practice them, realize them, and actualize them. Experience the intimacy of things, do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 great precepts were handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha generation after generation to my teacher, to myself, and now I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Okay. Three bows. Now I want to bring some words of Dada Roshi's to you. When the true eye opens, everything is realized as one. When the Dharma eye is opened, one is realized as everything. When the true eye functions, it clears away all discriminating thoughts and allows us to see the pure Dharmakaya, the body of reality, the absolute unity of the universe. When the Dharma eye functions, it brings forth a clarity that allows us to realize that nothing in this universe is hidden. Everything is revealed. Everything is as it is. The true eye is the eye of wisdom, which is like the diamond sword of Manjushri, which cuts through all of our illusions. The Dharma eye is the eye of compassion, an unbounded love, the mercy of Samantabhadra, which is dedicated to alleviating all suffering of all beings. Everyone has these two eyes, as do you. When we open both eyes, we realize Buddha mind. When we realize Buddha mind, we see for ourselves that self nature and Buddha nature are not two, but one. This is the treasury of the true Dharma eye, the Shobogenzo. This is giving life to the Buddha, the Kichimaku, the blood lineage. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Jennifer Sanford, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 10th day of November, 2019, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Seiren. So this Raksu is a robe. It is a robe of liberation. And these students have been sewing these Raksus all week and stitching the three treasures into them. And on the back is calligraphied some words, as well as your name, the lineage chart. On this 10th day of November 2019, Julia Krupa has received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Jiryu. On this 10th day of November 2019, Kasho, Choki, and Kasho. That's how we receive. On this 10th day of November 2019, Jacqueline Ferretti has received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Tenyu. On this 10th day of November 2019, Christine Nelson has received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Unsei. List of the ancestors. On this 10th day of November 2019, Christopher Varga has received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Seju. The lineage chart. On this 10th day of November 2019, Mika Shirota has received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Mukyo. Shoki. Everyone, please, Gansho. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is not other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. So now these new bodhisattvas will circumambulate the zendo in a walking bow, passing in front of each person's seat, and gives us, all of us, an opportunity to congratulate and welcome these recipients of these vows. And in that way, the Sangha, in a sense, we all take the precepts together, and we are bound together in this, mutually responsible. So, before we finish up, I'd like to say a little bit more about your names. So these names, we use Chinese characters with Japanese pronunciation, and the meanings of each character is part of your name, and it's part of becomes part of your path, your practice, and it has the ability to evolve as your practice evolves and develops. And so in that way, it's very much a living thing, and it's fresh. It begins today. And so, Jennifer, your name's Seirin. The character for Sei means peaceful, and peaceful is free of conflict. It's a place where there is no harm. It is possible because there are no walls in the mind, and no walls, and therefore there is no fear. There are no boundaries in Sei. The Buddha said, the world may quarrel with me, I do not quarrel with the world. This is Sei. Buddha nature itself is the essence of peace and peacefulness. Ren means to love, it is beloved, it is cherished, it is what is revered. It is that which we hold closely, in intimate contact. It's that which we protect as essential. Although the Dharma itself is empty, it cannot be touched, it cannot be corrupted, it cannot be gained or lost. All that we see, all that we practice, has to be protected. The great Bodhisattva's heart holds all beings in this beloved peace, recognizing that all beings are worthy of loving kindness and compassion. So Seirin is cherishing peace inside and outside in all directions. It is beloved peace, Seirin. Julia, your name, Jiryu. Ji is the character for compassion. Compassion is doing no harm. It's alleviating suffering. In any way, in any time, for anyone, in whatever way is possible, to whatever degree is possible. In that way, it's unbounded. And it's compassion for everything, for oneself and for others. If there is no compassion for ourselves, this is where we learn compassion. And then we take it forward into the world of sentience and insentience, into the world of people, two-legged, four-legged, multi-legged, no legs, all beings. This G, this compassion, is a way of being in the world. It's our heart. It's our basic heart. It's our basic impulse. Really, practice is just trying to release it. And it is the expression of selflessness through every thought, every word, every action. And it is a practice. Ryu is dragon, an enlightened being that holds the many gem. This gem cannot be taken by force, only through true release from everything that binds it. The dragon wants to let it go. It is not possessing that jewel. It's holding it for us. This dragon has no fixed form. Sometimes it's strong and fierce. Sometimes it's gentle, like a summer wind. And it is at home in the elements. The elements are its home. It is the elements itself. So Jiryu is this compassionate dragon. Jacqueline, your name Tenyu. The character for ten is the same character in the mountain's spiritual name, Tenkozan. It means heaven or heavenly. It also means sky. And so as sky is the heavens, it's vast, it's boundless, it reaches everywhere. It has no boundary, it can't be defined or contained. And yet it appears sometimes as dark and foreboding, sometimes it's clear and radiant. It is always and only ten, only heavens, only sky. You is courage and devotion. It's very interesting. Courage is the root of the word courage in the Western world is heart, which is very akin to devotion. And this you, this courage, is fearlessness, sometimes in a moment that is free of fear, sometimes within fear itself. This you is just not held back by fear. So whether fear appears or not is okay. It's also seen into the nature of fear. You know, the courageous generally don't know courage. They're just doing what's before them. They're just meeting what's before them. They don't know themselves as courageous in that moment. That's why it's courage. To be devoted to a true path requires courage. This is made very clear in the teachings. And so in our own moments of anxiety and insecurity, we should know that we're in good company. All the Buddhas of the past, everyone before us, has had such moments and has continued. This is the courage to be true and to face all that is true. Tenuous, heavenly courage, boundless devotion. Christine, your name is Ansei. The character for An here is the same as in Ango, peaceful dwelling. So this An is peace, it's calm, it's free of the hindrances, karmic hindrances, but it's also finding, discovering peace within hindrances. It appears in moments where there is harmony and it appears in moments where there is discord. This peace also can be peaceful, as gentle and calm. It can also be very powerful. It's not an idea, An. This peace is the path itself. It is also every step. Say is vow, a deep, heartfelt, solemn pledge to commit one's whole being, to turn in the direction of what is true, and to not waver. When wavering, to return. Don't make a big deal about it. Vow is a living thing. It's a breathing thing. It's a you thing. It doesn't live anywhere else. It's not theoretical. It's not abstract. It is every moment. There is no time to not live this vow. Anse is the vow of peace. It is a peaceful vow. Being peace. Christopher, your name, Seju. Se means true or authentic. It's that which is not contrived, not artificial. And this se is true all the time. It's not something you do. It's not something you can lose. But it can be held back in our awareness, in our cognition, by our lack of trust, by our lack of self-acceptance, by our attachments. This say is good in and of itself. It's self-affirming. It's self-restoring. Even in failure, this say, this authentic self, is untarnished. And it is also a practice. There's a practice of being authentic, which means recognizing when we're not. And then to return to being straight ahead, upright, genuine. Zhu is pearl. It is that gem that the dragon has in its paw, waiting for you. Dogen said, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? The true vehicle is self-sufficient. What it need is there for special effort. The whole body is free from dust. This is Ju. This is the pearl. Master Yunmin said, within this mountain of form is a light. This is Ju, the pearl. A student once asked their teacher, I heard that you said the world in all 10 directions is one bright pearl. How can I understand this? The teacher said, the world in all 10 directions is one bright pearl. What use is understanding it? Dogen says, do not comment on this pearl. Just practice it. Realize it. Actualize it. Everyone has it. You have it. The whole body and mind is one bright pearl. What use is understanding it? Practice it. Seju, authentic pearl. And Mukyo. Mu here is not that mu. Mu here is dream. Everything that appears in an instant is gone in an instant. Everything. There is nothing else. There is nothing that is not like this. In that way, everything appears like shadows dancing through trees. Something is there, but what is it? Is it real or is it not real? Is it you or is it not you? And just as in a sleeping dream where people appear, we have actions, words are spoken, there's scenery, and then we wake up and it dissolves. We can't hold on to it, but there was something there. And there's a lingering trace of something, a shadow memory. We call that the self. Kyo is mirror. The clear mind, the mind of samadhi, the free of attachment to good and bad, to judgment, it just shows whatever appears before it. Even dust on the mirror doesn't tarnish the mirror. The dust itself is a dream. The mirror, too, is a dream. Practice and enlightenment is a dream. And so we can dream ourselves to sleep, or we can dream ourselves awake. We can create a hell dream, or we can create an enlightened dream. This mirror mind reveals every dream as liberation. Dream mirror, Mukyo. In taking these vows, you have entered into the bloodstream of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, which is a great gift. And it is also a responsibility. To be born into this life is to be born into responsibility. We can experience that as a burden, or we can experience that as an offering. And so in reflecting on all that you have gone through to get to this point, and there has been much reflection, and then there's the point of madness where you commit, you leap. And how else could we describe it but madness? Because you don't know. You leap without knowing what comes next. That is the whole point of the leaping, is to leap into that which you don't know, and to do that as Buddhadharma, yourself, to do that with this commitment, to do that with this Sangha, to do that as your responsibility. And then at the moment you leap, then you begin to see what you've just done, what you're in the midst of, which in a sense is what we have been in the midst of from the beginning. And this is just a moment where we open our eyes to that a bit more. And I recognize that in all that we have done together and all that has happened today, that it lands in you, each of you, differently, right? Because you each have your own karma, and that's always true. And there are parts of it that land right in the middle of your heart. And there are other parts of it that they may sit on top of your skin, right? And that's also true and natural. But when you remain open and you really practice and have faith in this Dharma, then you create the possibility of all of this working its way into your heart. So what does ancestry mean? What is lineage? What is a name? What is a vow? What is an action? What is karma? So this is the abundance, the wealth that you're in the midst of, that you have just leapt into. So may you use it well, and your lives be a great generosity. Congratulations.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.